Imagine the most secure fortress ever built. Impenetrable walls, hyper-vigilant guards, a system so sophisticated it can tell the difference between a friend and a foe from a mile away. Now imagine the one thing that can save everyone inside is stuck on the outside, unable to get past the gate.
That is a powerful image, and it's not science fiction. That fortress is, in a way, inside every one of us, guarding our most precious asset.
Exactly. It's the central paradox we're exploring today. The very system designed for our ultimate protection can also be the biggest obstacle to healing. We're talking about the blood-brain barrier.
Our episode title calls it The Brain's Silent Alchemist, and I think that's perfect. It's this mysterious, incredibly complex structure that works silently to protect the command center of our entire body.
It really is. And for me, this isn't just an academic topic. I had a close family friend diagnosed with a brain tumor a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember sitting in on these meetings, hearing brilliant doctors talk about promising drugs that just couldn't get to where they needed to go. They were stopped cold by this barrier. It was maddening.
Yeah, and that's a frustration shared by millions of patients and their families. My interest comes from a similar place, but also from just sheer awe at the biology of it. How can a network of cells be so exquisitely selective? How does it know to let glucose in, but keep a virus out? It's one of the most elegant designs in all of nature.
An elegant design that presents a monumental challenge. So what we want to do in this conversation is pull back the curtain on this silent alchemist. First, we'll try to understand how it works, what it's actually made of.
And then we get to the really fascinating part, the clever, almost audacious ways that scientists are trying to outsmart it. We're going to be talking about Trojan horses at a molecular level, using focused ultrasound to create temporary doorways. It's truly on the cutting edge.
It's a story of human ingenuity versus biological evolution. So the big question we'll be tackling is this. How do you deliver a life-saving key when the lock was designed to be unpickable?
Let's dive in. Where do we even begin to understand this incredible structure?
Well, I think the best way to start is to dismantle that fortress analogy brick by brick. We're not talking about a single wall. It's more like a living, breathing border crossing. The primary building blocks are specialized cells called endothelial cells. They line all the blood vessels, the capillaries, in the brain.
Okay, so these are the guards at the gate?
They're more than the guards. They're the gate itself. And what makes them so special in the brain is how they're connected. In the rest of your body, there are little gaps between these cells, allowing things to leak in and out. But in the brain, they are sealed together by something called tight junctions. Think of it as the strongest mortar you can imagine, leaving absolutely no gaps.
So it's a truly seamless barrier. Nothing gets through the cracks because there are no cracks. That's incredible. But then how does the brain get anything it needs? How does it get food, oxygen?
That's where the alchemist part comes in. This isn't just a dumb wall. It's an intelligent, highly regulated system. Embedded within those endothelial cells are thousands of tiny gatekeepers, transporter proteins. Each one is designed to recognize and carry a specific molecule across.
So there's a special door just for glucose, another one for certain amino acids?
Precisely. Your brain is a massive energy hog, so it has a huge number of glucose transporters constantly ferrying fuel across. But if a molecule comes along that doesn't have the right key for one of those transporters, it's denied entry. Period.
And that's the problem for medicine. The drugs we design, they don't have the key.
They don't have the key. And the numbers are just staggering. We're talking about over 98% of all small molecule drugs and virtually 100% of large molecule drugs like antibodies being completely blocked.
98%. Just let that sink in. That means for every 50 drugs that might work on a brain tumor or an Alzheimer's plaque in a petri dish, maybe one has a chance of even reaching its target in a living person. That's a brutal reality for drug development.
It's the single biggest hurdle. But there's another layer to this. It's not just about letting things in. The barrier is also incredibly good at kicking things out.
Oh, like bouncers at a club?
Exactly like that. There are things called efflux pumps. Imagine a molecule, maybe a small, fat-soluble one that manages to sneak through the cell membrane. These pumps recognize it as foreign and actively pump it right back out into the bloodstream before it can do anything.
Wow. So it's a double-layer defense, a wall to keep things out, and then active surveillance to throw out anyone who manages to slip past. How did we even figure all this out? I mean, it's microscopic. It's not like you can just look and see it working.
It's actually a fascinating story. It goes back to the late 1800s with a scientist named Paul Ehrlich. He was working with chemical dyes.
The guy who invented staining, right?
The very same. He was injecting this blue dye into the bloodstream of mice. And he noticed something bizarre. The dye would spread everywhere. The skin, the liver, the heart.
Mm-hmm.
The entire mouse would turn blue. Except for one organ.
The brain.
The brain. It stayed perfectly pristine. At first, he just thought the brain tissue didn't absorb the dye. But then, about a decade later, one of his students, Edwin Goldman, had a brilliant idea. He reversed the experiment.
What do you mean?
Instead of injecting the dye into the blood, he injected a tiny amount directly into the cerebrospinal fluid that bathes the brain.
Oh, I see where this is going. The brain turned blue.
The brain turned a brilliant blue. But the rest of the body? Nothing. It was a perfect mirror image. That was the first real tangible proof that there was some kind of barrier separating the brain's circulation from the rest of the body. They couldn't see it, but they could see its effect, clear as day.
That's so elegantly simple. It proves there's a one-way system, or at least a highly restricted two-way system, in place. And that simple dye experiment laid the foundation for a century of frustration and incredible ingenuity.
And that ingenuity, it really kicked into high gear once we understood the mechanisms of the fortress. Once we knew about the specific gatekeepers, the transporters, the thinking became, okay, if we can't smash the door down, what if we trick the guards into opening it for us?
Like a Trojan horse.
Exactly. The molecular Trojan horse. It's one of the most elegant strategies out there. You take a drug that the brain would normally reject on sight, and you attach it to a molecule that the brain desperately wants and has a dedicated transporter for.
So you're disguising the medicine as... as food, essentially, like hiding a bill in a piece of cheese for a dog.
That is a perfect analogy. One of the most common pieces of cheese they use is transferrin, which is a protein that carries iron. The brain needs iron, so it has these transferrin receptors all over the blood-brain barrier, ready to grab it. So scientists engineer these nanoparticles, or antibodies. They coat them with transferrin, and suddenly the barrier's own gatekeepers are actively pulling the drug across the wall.
That's brilliant. It's not fighting the system. It's using the system against itself, but it sounds almost too simple. Does the disguise ever get blown? I mean, once the horse is inside, how does it release the soldiers, the drug, to the right place? And does it release them at all?
You've hit on the critical challenge. It's a delicate balancing act. You have to tune the avidity, basically the stickiness. If the drug is attached too weakly, it falls off in the bloodstream before it even reaches the brain, if it's attached too strongly. Well, it gets inside the fortress, but it never leaves the horse. It just gets catered right back out again, still locked away.
So the chemistry has to be perfect. Sticky enough to get a ride, but weak enough to let go at the right moment. The level of precision there is just mind-boggling. It feels like we're moving from biology to pure engineering.
It really is. But that approach, the Trojan horse, is still fundamentally a biological one. It's about trickery. There's another strategy that is, Well, it's pure physics. It's far more direct.
More direct how? If the Trojan horse is the spy mission, what's this, the battering ram?
Precisely. It's called focus ultrasound. And it's exactly what it sounds like. Scientists take a patient, inject microscopic gas bubbles into their bloodstream, and then aim high-frequency sound waves at a very specific point in the brain.
Wait, bubbles? In the bloodstream? That sounds... terrifying. My first thought is an embolism.
It does, right? But these are specially designed... harmless microbubbles. And when the ultrasound waves hit them, they start to vibrate, rapidly expanding and contracting. As they pass through the capillaries in the target area, that vibration literally, physically pushes and pulls on the endothelial cells.
And it pries open those tight junctions?
It creates a temporary reversible opening. For a few hours, the gate is just cue to open. And any drug that you've injected into the bloodstream can just flow right in directly to where it's needed. Then the barrier seals itself back up.
That is audacious. It feels so much more invasive somehow. With the Trojan horse, you're tricking the guards. Here, you're creating a momentary hole in the fortress wall itself. The biggest concern then has to be, what else gets in? While that door is open, are you also letting in toxins, pathogens, things the barrier is supposed to protect you from?
That is the billion-dollar question, isn't it? And it's the number one concern for every single researcher in this field. You're essentially knocking down the main gate to the city's command center. The risk is immense, and they are acutely aware of it.
So how do they manage it? How do you stop a stray bacteria or a random toxin from waltzing in while you're trying to deliver chemotherapy?
Well, a few things. First, the opening is incredibly localized. We're talking about targeting an area the size of a few millimeters. It's not like the whole barrier goes down. Second, it's temporary.
Mm-hmm.
The tight junctions start to reform within hours. And third, the procedure happens in a completely sterile environment. But you're right, the risk is not zero. It's a profound trade-off.
It really is. And it makes me think about the two approaches we've discussed. The Trojan horse feels so elegant, so respectful of the biology. The focused ultrasound, as brilliant as it is, feels a bit like picking a lock with a sledgehammer. It works, but the potential for collateral damage just seems so much higher.
I see that, I do. But think about the context. For a patient with an aggressive glioblastoma, the alternative is certain death. The sledgehammer in that case might be the only tool that can break down the wall fast enough. The elegance of the Trojan horse is incredible, but it's also incredibly difficult to engineer perfectly for every single drug.
That's a fair point, the right tool for the right job. It's just, when I step back and think about this whole conversation, what really stays with me is that this barrier isn't just a passive wall. We've been so focused on how to get past it, but its own health, its own integrity, seems to be a central character in the story of brain health itself.
Oh, absolutely. We frame this as a drug delivery problem, but maybe the bigger story is what happens when the barrier fails on its own. We're now seeing that a leaky blood-brain barrier is implicated in everything from epilepsy after a traumatic brain injury to the progression of Alzheimer's and complications after a stroke.
Wait, really? So the breakdown of the fortress isn't just a strategy we use, it's a disease mechanism in itself?
Precisely. And what's causing those leaks is the next massive area of research. And some of the findings are, they're coming from places you would never expect.
Like what?
Your gut. There's emerging evidence that the health and maturity of your gut microbiome, the bacteria living in your intestines, can directly influence the permeability of the blood-brain barrier.
You're joking. My gut bacteria can affect the fortress walls in my head? How is that even? That's astonishing. The alchemist isn't just silent. It's listening to conversations happening all the way down in the digestive system.
The whole body is a conversation. It just underscores the complexity. We started this hour talking about a simple wall, a mechanical problem. And we're ending on the gut-brain axis, molecular Trojan horses, and vibrating microbubbles. It's a testament to how much we're learning.
I mean, too.
It really is. For me, the final thought is one of, I guess, humility. In the face of this system that evolution has perfected over millions of years, it's a beautiful, intelligent design, and our attempts to outsmart it, as clever as they are, should always come with a profound sense of respect for what it is we're tinkering with.
Well said, and for me, it ends on a note of incredible optimism. To see the sheer ingenuity being brought to bear on this problem, from physics to biology to chemistry, it gives you real hope that for so many of these devastating neurological diseases, we might finally have found a key to the unpickable lock.
A key, or at least a very good lockpick. It has been a fascinating journey through the brain's last frontier. Thank you all for joining us on this deep dive.